Okay. You can't hear me? Yeah. So
you can just leave it on, but not, you know, mute your speaker so that way you won't hear me twice. As I start every class, and we'll discuss next week, I started to explain off the recording, but last week we talked about the world is an illusion. This week we're going to answer the question why the physical world was built, why it's created, why we are created. And this is really background and an initial structure for you to understand the tools. Starting next week and from that every week, we will give you a new, different tool. The tools are useful. They are used to remove chaos from your life, but only if you use them. So, as we have the rule in this class, never believe a word I say, but please try what I suggest you try. And with that in mind, I'm going to start the class with the Kabbalist prayer, and I'm going to pass around. I only have two copies. I know if you know it, please feel free to join me. If you don't know it, there it is. And next week, I'm going to ask you to bring that copy that you'll print out on your printer, which is on the third class of the basic class on the website, yeshem.com. I don't want to take the time now to go through where that is and all of that background. If you don't know it, we'll do it later in the class. Another Koach, Gedulat Yemincha, Chati, Serura, Aleph Bet Gimel Yutav Tzadi. This sequence connects us to the phrase Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love, and to the name of God, Vav Shin Resh, which connects us through memories, but not the traditional memories, the patterns in our life that are really memories from previous lives. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sadvenu Taharenu No Ra Ufrei Shayan Sintet Nun. This sequence of letters spells two Hebrew words, Kra Satan. It means to tear up Satan, to remove the negativity. The letters can be permutated to spell two other Hebrew words, Sha'ar Katan. They sound the same, but they're not. And they mean small gates. And that's a hint to us to guard our gates, the eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which are the entry points for the negative system. Na gibor dorshe yehudcha kevavat shamrem nun gimodalet yud kafshin. Nun Gimel Dalet, through its gematria of 57, connects us to the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasa, or sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence of letters that helps us take back the energy we've given to the negative system through our mistakes. Barchem Taharem Rachame Sidkatha Tami Gamlem Betet Resh Saditav Gimel Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuva Nael Adatach Chetuf Bet Tet Nunayim Yachid Gee Lamcha Pene Zokre Kiddushatach Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence helps to speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium, during this, our generation. The letter Resh created the planet Kohav, the planet Mercury, and the Yud that created the constellation Betulah, the Virgo. Together they have a gematria of 210, which is the same as the Hebrew word Redu. Redu means to go down, as in Abraham went down to Egypt, and Jacob went down to Egypt. And the spiritual law that we have to go down in order to rise up. But in the physical world that is an illusion, we don't have to lose before we receive more from the Creator. Shabbatenu Kavel, Ushma Tziakatenu, Yodea Talumot, Shinkufat Zadiyutah. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vayet. If you are sensitive to energy, you felt energy. If you're not sensitive to energy, as I am not, you just sounds. But those sounds do penetrate your soul. That song, poem, verses, is the energy of creation. Those are the 42 letters that God used to create our world and all of us. I'm also going to read from a verse from the Zohar. I'm reading from the Parasha of Ki Tetzeh, which is a very esoteric portion of the week. Verse 53, one's fear of sin precedes one's wisdom. This is my name, the Hebrew word of Shemi, Yud-Heh, forever. And this is my memorial, the Hebrew word is Zikri, Vav-Heh. Shemi plus Yud-Keh, or Yud-Heh, is in numerical value 365. And Zikri plus Vav-Heh is in numerical value 248. Altogether, they have the numerical value of 613, namely the 613 mitzvot given to the holy children, so they will have a portion in his name. This is the meaning of, for Hashem's portion is his people. I'm now going to bring a subject up that I wouldn't normally bring this early in these classes. So I hope you will understand it. It is not meant to convert anybody to Judaism. Not part of my what I teach. What I teach is that anybody that is on a spiritual path is a Jew. Because the idea of being a Jew means you open the door between the physical and the spiritual. Being on a spiritual path is what that's about. But within the Jewish religion, step back, within the Kabbalistic background, there are rituals that help and assist people in avoiding chaos. One of those is called the High Holidays, and they start the evening of September 28th. They run for 23 days. Some of those days are more intense energy, and we will treat them like a Shabbat, where we don't touch electricity and we don't do creative process on those days. And others of those days are just days, I shouldn't say just, are days where energy is entering into the system. But it's not as intense. On the day of Rosh Hashanah, which means the head of the year, the evening of September 28th and the day of September 29th, and the evening of September 29th and the day of September 30th. On those days, every human being is judged. Actually, every human being, the evening of September 28th, falls asleep. Actually, he dies. We all die. We run out of energy. The gas dries up. We no longer can function for an instant. And then we're given enough energy to continue through these 23 days. We are being reborn in a sense. We need to grow from birth to maturity over those 23 days. What those 2 days, which is one long day of judgment, is, what did you do with your year this past year? You received the energy to do certain things, to achieve your tikkun, to come into this world and do good deeds, whatever that means to you. What did you do with it, that energy? What did you do with that energy? Welcome. So the question is, God is judging you to decide how much energy you're going to get for this year. Yes. Tikkun means correction. I'm sorry. It's a Hebrew word. You may have heard the phrase tikkun olam spoken or read in some of the papers. Correction of the world. And I will explain that in much more detail tonight. But what I'm talking about now, and I apologize for doing that, sometimes I get so used to people knowing what I'm saying that I don't translate. On Rosh Hashanah, God sits in his throne of judgment and decides for each and every one of us how much energy we're going to get next year. What type of energy? Are you going to live through the year? Are you going to be sick in the year? All of those things. Because ultimately, there is free will and everything is known. And that will be reconciled for you during the fifth class. The only place, one of the rituals, one of the tools that are used to make sure that the prosecutor in this courtroom, it's not a courtroom like we have here, but it's similar. The difference is it's a courtroom filled with love. It's a courtroom that says, what did you do last year? Well, you didn't do all that you could have done. Mr. Prosecutor, whose name is Satan, what's your plan to motivate this person to do all that he can do this year? That's the love. Of course, Satan doesn't have your best interest at heart, because he's been hired to do one job, and that's to make you busy with him and lengthen your tikkun process. So he presents a plan to the Creator for you. And you get there to sit there. Your soul is sitting there in the defense chair with the inability to defend yourself because only truth can be said. The Creator, in his mercy, has given us a tool called the shofar. And when we blow the shofar, as crazy as it sounds, when we blow the shofar, the Satan loses our file. He doesn't remember what we said, who we did, who we hurt, and how we did things. My recommendation, I'm not trying to make you Jewish, but you're going to be judged whether you go to the synagogue and listen to the shofar or not. Why not go and try it this year? That's my request. Now I'm going to start the rest of the normal class. If you want to have information about where or how I'm in this, I'm here, I will be going. We can talk about it. Now I'm going to pass out some papers in both directions. They're for you to take home. They're for you to play with as I talk because you get bored with me today. They're a tool for you to learn something about yourself and about the world. Our science, and we've all learned it either in school or from the papers, and it's in the 20th century that it occurred. Our science, our physicists have told us that the world was created from a Big Bang. And everybody knows those terms, but maybe they don't know what it means. But essentially, the idea is that all of the physical world came from a big explosion. And then that explosion created heat, created heat, and did its thing and cooled down, and then it became galaxies, and then it became suns, and then it became planets. And this is the evolutionary process that, according to science, has taken 13.5 billion years right now. When I was growing up in the 70s, it was 15 billion years, approximately. The mathematics that define the Big Bang, that are the theories of modern physics, the mathematics breaks down at a third of a second after the Big Bang. They cannot know what took place in that third of a second. Their math doesn't work. But our sages, primarily Rabbi Isaac Luria, who lived in Sfat in the 1500s, taught what happened before the Big Bang, what caused the Big Bang. That's what I'm going to teach you. Now, it would be easier for me to give you a chart to explain this flow to you, this evolutionary process. But Rabbi Ashlag, the foremost Kabbalist of the 20th century, in my opinion, and probably everyone's opinion now. He writes that we should not use two-dimensional charts. They confuse us. They limit us. So I'm going to ask you to follow my words, but if you are a learner who is not a verbal learner, come see me afterwards and I'll go over the material with you. And we'll put it on a chart that might help be more visual. There is a creator. There is a first cause. What is the first cause? I'm a cause because I have children. My parents were the cause of me. My grandparents were the cause of my parents. My great-grandparents, the cause of my grandparents. Back to Adam and Eve. Back to Noah. Back, there is a cause, and then there is an effect. Back to the Big Bang, there is a cause. Before the Big Bang, there is a cause that created the effect called the Big Bang. Then there is a world beyond that. A spiritual world. It's not physical. Then there is a world beyond that. That world is the cause of the spiritual world that caused the Big Bang. And then there is a world beyond that. And then there is another world beyond that. And then there are other worlds ad infinitum. All being an effect of a cause. And that cause above it is the effect of a cause above it. Until we get to a point that we say there is a first cause, there is something that started the process. We call that first cause, first cause. We also call that first cause creator. Rabbi Ashlag tells us, do not waste your time contemplating what the creator is. You cannot name the creator. We all use the word God in English. Is my God, and when I say the word God, do you know what I mean? Am I talking about a God of judgment, or am I talking about a God of mercy and love? Am I talking about a God who hates me or who loves me? Am I talking about a God who gets angry? Or am I talking about something I can't understand? The Kabbalists have taught us, don't try and understand what you cannot name. When you give something a name, you define it. You limit it. It's an aspect, a trait. We have a first cause. Does the name first cause define God? It doesn't. It helps us understand the concept, but it doesn't define God. Now, the first God, the first cause, has a thought of creation. We don't know what the thought of creation is. Actually, we do. But we can't define it because it's in a frame of the first cause. We can't name it. We can't define it. But the thought of creation caused an extension of that first cause, which the Kabbalists label light. They define it as light. The essence of light, and why the Kabbalists use the word light, which is or in Hebrew, is if we understand the concept of a candle, I can take one lit candle and light two more. And those three can light three more, six more, eight more, a million more. Each time the candle lights another candle, it is sharing its essence. Each time the candle lights another candle, does it diminish its essence? Does it become less? It just shares. This is the nature and essence of light. And this is why the Kabbalists call that extension of the Creator light. What light wants to do is share. What does light share with? Light has to be revealed. If this light bulb didn't shine into this vessel called this room, it would be dark in here. Light and vessel. The extension created light. Didn't create light, it is light. The essence of the Creator is to share. When the Creator had this thought to create, to share with its creations, it created the creations. But that creation was one vessel, one entity that had the capacity, I'm using a word that really isn't a valid word when we talk about this level of consciousness. This capacity implies limitation. And this location, this essence is called endless. There is no limitation to the light or the vessel. At this place, at this process. The life and the vessel come together. Now, in spirituality, I can take this and put it in the refrigerator and light a fire on it. And it'll burn in the refrigerator, and it'll be cold on the bottom and hot on top. But in spirituality, opposites don't attract, they repel. They move to different places. What has affinity, what is similar, comes together and is close together. Light has the essence of sharing. Vessel has the essence of receiving. There is nothing more opposite than light and vessel, sharing and receiving. Yet in this endless world, this endless place, these two opposites are in unity. We cannot understand this. It's a paradox. It cannot be understood as long as we are in the physical body. But the light and the vessel are in unity in this endless place, this endless world. And for eons, because there is no time, for eons, the vessel doesn't even have a lack. It has a desire that forms in its consciousness and it's fulfilled before it feels that it doesn't have something. It's constantly being fulfilled because the light wants to be revealed and the purpose of the vessel is to reveal it. And this is what's going on for aeons. The light and the vessel are in unity. Now, I'm going to give you a parable or an anecdote or a metaphor. I invite you all out to dinner tomorrow night. I don't have that much money, so please don't come. I want you all to come with me tomorrow night for dinner. We're going to have a lovely dinner. It's going to be the most expensive place in town, the best food. If you're vegetarian, you'll have vegetarian. If you're meat eaters, you'll have meat. Whatever it is you want is going to be there. Anything. Cost is no object. And when we go there, we have a wonderful time. We listen to the music. We get fed till we're totally fulfilled. And we get up to leave, and I pick up the check. And everybody is happy. We had such a great time. Let's do it tomorrow. Tomorrow, you all come. We have another absolutely amazing time. Truly wonderful. And I pick up the check. Let's do it tomorrow. I do this every day for 10 years. Every day we come together and share a wonderful meal. What's going to happen to you? Besides getting fat, because I'm already there. What's going to happen to you? How are you going to feel? I'm sorry?
Bored.
Because eating isn't your thing.
Well,
okay.
Doing the same
thing with the same people. Actually, you wouldn't get bored. Because you get bored with your best friend. You get angry, you get upset, but you don't get bored. So I'm talking about best friends coming together. How would you feel? You took your best friend out to dinner every day for 10 years. How would your best friend feel? A tradition, okay. Human beings don't feel comfortable receiving free lunches. Human beings do not feel comfortable not earning what they have. We look in our world, the greatest percentage of children who commit suicide, God forbid, comes from wealthy people. Our society creates people, and it's not the society. People innately do not want to receive nothing or something for nothing. The Kabbalists label this, frame it, give it a name, Lechem Mizayim, bread of shame. Bread of shame. The more you eat, the worse you feel. The more uncomfortable you become. If we went out to dinner and I was picking up the check every day for 10 years, sometime during that 10 years, each of you would say, let me pay for it tonight. Let me take a share. I can't afford all of it. Let me help. But you don't feel comfortable receiving what you haven't earned. This is an innate essence of the human being. And it comes from that endless world. Because after eons, the vessel said to the light, the more you give me, the worse I'm feeling. In fact, I feel so bad, I want to die. If you give me one more thing, I'll die. I don't want it. Stop. So what do you have? You have a desire to stop. And you have an essence to share that says the desire is not to share. Is this a paradox? Sure. One step. The vessel developed a consciousness of bread of shame, an unhappiness, a depression. The more it fed, the more it received, the more it was satisfied, the worse it felt. It said to the light, no more. Stop. I don't want it. The light is saying, I want to share. If I stop, the vessel dies. If I stop, I'm not being revealed. Wait a second. The vessel is giving me a desire. How do I fulfill this desire to not share? That is the cause of the Big Bang. The light says, okay, you don't want from me. You want to earn what you're receiving? I'm going to create some worlds where you can earn what you want, what you are getting. And that is the cause of the Big Bang. Not in our physical world, but in those spiritual worlds. And each of those spiritual worlds had a Big Bang. And it came down less energy and less energy and less energy until the physical universe was created in a Big Bang. But what's the reason for that creation? The vessel wants to remove bread of shame. That's the purpose of the creation of the physical world. Who is the vessel? Where is the vessel in the physical world? Man pointed to himself. He's saying, I'm the vessel. Or part of it. Every human being is the vessel. Every animal is part of the vessel. Every plant is part of the vessel. Every atom, free-based atom, air, everything that's physical is part of the vessel. And it is here in this world to do one thing. Remove bread of shame. How does it remove bread of shame? By sharing with each other. We came here to share. Now, we have this little thing called the Garden of Eden. And you all know the story. God put a tree in the center of the garden called the Tree of Life, and also the Tree of Knowledge, Good and Evil. And he created Adam and Eve together, back to back. They were not separated. And then he decided that it was not good for man to be alone, so he operated on Adam and took Eve from outside, from inside of Adam to the outside of Adam, and created male and female. And then he gave them a mitzvah. No, it's not a command. It's a recommendation. Because there's no coercion in spirituality. I thought you did. I apologize. It's a blessing. Yes, it is. A mitzvah is a blessing. But do you know why it's a blessing? A mitzvah is a blessing because it connects you to the Creator. A mitzvah is translated as command many places. It isn't. A mitzvah is translated as a good deed. A mitzvah is translated as a blessing. But a mitzvah is actually, the essence of a mitzvah is a connection to the Creator. And there are 613 mitzvot, the plural of mitzvah, in the Torah. The Esser Dibrot, what you normally translate as the Ten Commandments, which are really the ten utterances, the ten sentences, the ten phrases, are part of the 613 mitzvot. The physical world is created. Adam and Chava are created, they're separated, and they're given this mitzvah. Adam is given the mitzvah. Do not eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, for surely on that day you will die. God doesn't lie, right? Another time I'll tell you that he does, but today I'm telling you he doesn't. Along comes the Chava and an entity called the Nachash, the snake. And he pushes her. I skipped a step. Adam said to Chava, do not touch the tree. Along comes the snake and pushes Chava into the tree. And she didn't die. So he talks or seduces her into eating from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. And her eyes are open. She gets wonderful wisdom. And she wants Adam to have a share. So she goes to him and asks him to join her. And he agrees, and he also eats. Guess what happened? Why does the Torah use the metaphor of eating? Just like the Kabbalists use metaphor of bread of shame, eating. Same idea. Except what happened was negativity, selfishness was injected into the DNA of every human being. That's what the tree of life, good and evil. That's what the mistake, the sin of Adam, was the injection of selfishness into us. We were created as a desire to receive in the endless world as a vessel. To receive, have a desire. I want to fulfill the desire. That's the Creator. In this world, we're here to share, to remove bread of shame. And what happens? We no longer care about sharing because we're after ourselves. Greed, pain, suffering, all of that comes from this one place, the desire to receive for oneself alone. Babies are born as a desire to receive for oneself alone. Take a baby, a newborn baby, open up its arms. It'll bring everything in. It's telling you, I want everything out there. I want it all. If that baby leaves its arms out there when you open it, the neurologists say it's not a healthy baby. There's something wrong. I'm sorry? In what sense? That if they don't, they leave their arms out, they're healthy? That is not the opposite. It's consistent. Because when babies are asleep, their soul is not there. And the fact that they're not looking for everything to come into them shows that they have a consciousness of sharing, which is why we are here in this world, to make that correction, to change the desire to receive for oneself alone into the desire to receive in order to share. We are desires. We were created as desires. There is nothing wrong with wanting to be wealthy, wanting to be happy, wanting to have 120 children, wanting to have whatever you want. You were created to desire. Your job in this world is to change the selfishness of that desire into one of sharing. I want the 120 children so that this process will end quicker. The more souls that come into the world, the faster the process will take place. I want the wealth of the world in order to share it with people who are less advantaged than I am. It's a consciousness. It's also part of the process. It is the creation of your correction. Because each and every one of us existed in Adam and Eve. We were all there. We all participated in that sin. Adam walked up to the tree, or Eve walked up to the tree. If your soul comes from the legs of Adam, the aspect of participation is in walking, and your correction will be somewhat dealing with walking. If you're from the voice box of Adam, you have the words. If you're from the esophagus of Adam, it's part of the eating. If you're from the hands of Adam, you're going to be dealing with the picking of the fruit. All of this is our process. Now, remember what God said to Adam? If you eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, on that day you will surely die. And God doesn't lie. But Adam didn't die on that day, did he? He died in the year 930. He lived 930 years. He was supposed to live 1,000 years, but he gave 70 of his years to King David. Adam died on the day he ate from the tree, because 1,000 years is one day. There were 7 days of creation. There are 7,000 years to our process. What happens at the end of 7,000 years? We don't get there, because the last 1,000 years is Shabbat. Is that gift that you don't know what Shabbat means yet. Shabbat is truly a gift. It is a blessing. That last 1,000 years is peace on earth, serenity on earth, heaven on earth, whatever you want to call it. But we have 6,000 years to achieve our corrections. We are in the year 5772, starting on September 28th. Almost there. So we have 228 years to go. You want to know why there are airplanes in this world? Because we have to speed up people interacting with each other and making their correction with each other. You want to know why we have telecommunication? Because we have to be able to communicate across longer distances in more rapid time. You're driving down the street to go home from work. Maybe you're on the freeway, maybe you're not. But there's two lanes on that highway. Your soul, your aura, goes out 88 inches in every direction. Measure a car from the driver sitting out 88 inches, and you're going to interact with each other when those cars pass. You think you're driving home from work? You're not. You're exchanging metaphysical energy on your soul level, on your aura, with other people's aura. You get into an elevator to go up to the 17th floor of a building because you're going to visit your lawyer or your accountant. No, you're not. You got into that elevator because the people who got in with you, you have an exchange of energy that you need to generate, called a tikkun, a correction. And that's why you're there. Don't believe a word I say. But over the next 20 weeks, you'll come to know that what I've said to you is truth. You'll come to see cause and effect, not physical cause and effect. Did you know that if I throw a ball at the glass at a window and I take a photograph of that, the window starts to break before the ball gets there? How does that happen? Physicists haven't been able to explain it. Kabbalists, it's no problem because everything is consciousness. You see a mother with a screaming tantrum child in the middle of an aisle at Walmart. What is she thinking? How embarrassing? Or is she thinking what's best for her child? She slaps the child to calm it down and get it up and start to function. Is that sharing? Or is she doing something for herself? What's the consciousness? The same action. You see a child going to touch a stove. You touch it on the tushy. Yiddish words. You give it a little shot so it knows not to touch it. Why are you doing that? To protect the child? To teach the child? Or because you're a sadist? Can I give you 14 other reasons? Of course. What's your consciousness? We have 200 more years to complete our correction. Time is speeding up. It's getting shorter. We are here in this world to share. We are here in this world to help others. We are here, yes. Yes. Every time you do an action that has the consciousness of the desire to receive in order to share, you remove a portion of the bread of shame from the endless vessel, from all of, more than humanity, all of the endless vessel. Because there are entities, consciousness, that are part of the endless vessel, but they don't live on earth. But the majority of the vessel is on earth. Does that mesh with your perception of the world? Yes.
And, you know, it doesn't seem like the whole world is growing.
absolutely agree with you, and you're wrong. So am I. We all have part of the correction to make. We all participated in the sin. We all have the responsibility and the obligation to remove it. But there are entities, negative entities, who wear the clothes of human beings, who have the job of lengthening this process, of getting us to the point where the 6,000 years comes and that prophecy called the Armageddon War manifests. But there are other prophecies in the book, in the prophets, in the books of the Bible. Those prophecies call for the lion to lie down with the lamb. Those prophecies call for a process of evolution that is peaceful and serene. Which one comes is up to us. There will be people who will try to lengthen the process and let the Armageddon War come, and there will be people who will try and have it peaceful. But ultimately, we have the 6,000 years unless we bring it earlier. And if we bring it earlier, it will come with peace and in serenity. When you see people not doing these actions, it's out of ignorance, because until you came and heard me, you didn't know anything about this. It's out of ignorance. It's out of making a mistake. And ultimately, they may not have to achieve their correction as long as a critical mass of human beings achieve that. Now, we've had 5,772 years, 71 plus years. In the Zohar, it says that Rabbi Shimon went to the Garden of Eden and saw about half of the Jewish men, 600,000 men from the Bible counting. He went and saw about half of them at his point, which was 2,000 years ago. Because the process of carnation or reincarnation, we come, we make mistakes, we get to do it over again, we come again in a different lifetime, we get to do it over again. That process, we reach a point where we will have a critical mass of enough of humanity that the light will be turned on. If I have a football stadium, totally dark, totally with furniture in it on the football field, and I light a light, a match, a candle, I'm not going to be able to see across the football field. But I can see some shapes, perhaps. I can know how not to bump into the couch and bump my foreleg. I light more candles. The room gets a little lighter. And now I can actually see the colors on the couch. Then I get enough light, I can actually see the dirt and the dust underneath the couch. Where do I need to clean? Where do I need to change myself? Where do I need to transform my desire to receive for oneself alone into a desire to receive in order to share? This is our job. Why we are in this physical world. Yes, you see, just as I see, the world is chaotic. When you use the tools that I'm going to give you and teach you, you will see also that your life becomes less chaotic. And as you realize that, people around you will realize that, and they will start to do it. That's how light spreads. But yes, there will be people who says, it's crap, it's coincidence. There's no truth to this. And they're entitled to their free will opinion, even if they're wrong. Or maybe I'm wrong. Never believe a word I say. Does anybody have any questions? Where do I come from? My mother told me I came from there. I'm playing. Please forgive me. Where do I come from? I was born in Los Angeles. One of the five natives in my kindergarten school. There were five of 40 kids who stood up and said they were born in California. The rest of them came from someplace else. I grew up in California. I was raised in a secular Jewish family that my father had started a business, very successful, so I was raised with wealth. And my father died when I was 16. My mother started running the family business until I finished college, and then I started running the family business. And got married, had a couple of kids, got to be 30 years old, got divorced because it was something that I needed to do, and it was appropriate because now that I understand Kabbalah, the correction that I had with that woman was over. We had made the correction, and we no longer needed to be together. So we got divorced, which is a mitzvah. And then I proceeded to run the business, and I had great goals. And for 14 years, I ran the family business and paid my sisters to stay away. And then some difficult times hit the business, and I had to go to my sisters and say no. And so essentially we sold the business because we couldn't reconcile how to solve it. And around that time, with all of this stress and legitimacy of that issue, which is very common to families, I found the Kabbalah Center, and I found the Kabbalah. And this said, this is the strangest thing I ever heard, but, you know, why not? Let's try. And I started to go to the classes once a week for 12 weeks. And in the middle of the sixth week, I went to my first Shabbat, and I walked into the synagogue, and I knew I was home. So I continued to study Kabbalah. At the end of that 12-week class, I was now taking two classes a night, four nights a week, and learning as much as I could constantly studying. Got into fights with my sister, handed her the keys to the business, walked away, moved on, and now I have a message to travel and teach Kabbalah to the people, primarily in America, although I'll go elsewhere if I get that message. And that's what I do. I do not live in Salt Lake. I will be here for approximately 10 weeks to the end of October. The 20 weeks of this basic class that I am teaching you will be through in December sometime. The difference of time when I move to another location, I will be teaching you over the internet. The philosophy that I have, the message that I have, people do not learn this without having a personal contact. There are people teaching Kabbalah on the internet. They're not, and they're getting thousands of students, thank God. But it's not being taught on a level that you can see my passion or their passion. Because over the internet, you don't get that passion. I'm in pain when you're in pain. That wasn't always true. I was not a very nice person in my last lifetime. And I wasn't such a nice person earlier in my career. But as I've learned how to transform myself, I'm still not such a nice person, but that's beside the point. This class is 20 weeks long. At the end of that 20 weeks, you will have the ability to have a personal connection to the Creator on a conscious level. You may already have that from your own spiritual path, but there will be tools and techniques taught and given to you in this class that will enhance your own spiritual path. Because ultimately, the beginning is Kabbalah, and the end is in the beginning. We live in a society, we live in a generation where we need these tools in order to cope with the darkness that we perceive around us. That darkness is really an illusion, but we have to have the tools to perceive that it's an illusion. Yes?
And the 10 messages that we gave up with that, mm-hmm. you download it, we can remember
them. Well, what I'm hoping, and it's up to you, is that this group will become a community that wants to study Kabbalah. I've been to, let's say, 8 cities. I have 8 groups of meetups, and I'm giving 11 classes a week. I sent you all an email showing my classes. You're welcome to join them, either by telephone conference or by video conference. And those classes are recorded and then put on the website. So the answer to your question is yes. If you don't go to a class or if you miss a class, you can hear it on the internet. You can download it. And as I said last week and explained, what I teach is Torah. What I teach has to be free to everyone. It was given to everyone. When the Torah was given to the Jews at Mount Sinai, it was also given to all 70 nations. When Joshua went into the Promised Land by crossing the Jordan River, he wrote the Torah on 2 stones, whitewashed stones, in all 70 languages. This information belongs to every human being. So it has to be given for free. But we live in a society, I'm not a wealthy man. The argument with my sister created a condition where I'm not wealthy. I have been. I'm still probably one of the wealthiest people you'll know because I am always happy. But on a financial level, I need donations to pay for the hotel rooms that I stay in and to travel from city to city. So that's what I do. In the library, we have agreed not to solicit donations while here. So please consider making donations either through PayPal or by sending me a check or calling me and saying, I'd like a donation, come get it. You know, however you want to do it. Some people brought donations today from last week or from this week. I don't know. I haven't looked. I don't care. Because I know the Creator provides for me because I'm doing the work of the Creator. That's what's known as a truly poor person. Have you ever given a homeless person a dollar and have them yell at you because it's not enough? Have you ever given a homeless person a penny and have him put it in his pocket and not say a word? When you do that, that homeless person, run after him. He's a truly poor person, and he was sent into your life to save it, to give you an opportunity to go out of your comfort zone, which is part of transforming your desire to receive for oneself alone into the desire to receive in order to share. I hope that answered your question about who I am.
How do you address the issue that I'm sharing if you have any know, and then you have your so how do you address that or teaching about that balance and awareness of Thanksgiving is?
I will give you a whole hour and a half class on that subject and how to know when it's right for you to give and when it's not. There are people who come into this world who their correction is to say no. I have a very close friend, known him for 20 years. He has the inability to say no to anybody in need. And he's now lost his wealth, and he still is unable to say no. And it is clear to me, as well as to him in discussion, that he knows he's supposed to say no, but he can't because he wants to be loved. Everybody has a correction. What is right for one is not right for the other. My worldview says, I will give you the tools to know when it is appropriate to share, not to give. You never give. You share. If you give, you expect something in return. And that is not sharing. That is not the creator. That's a human being, a selfish human being. And we all do it. I'm not attacking anybody for being that. We were created as that after the sin of Adam. Every human being born after Adam is born selfish. But our job is to transform that so that we share without the question, so what if he's a scammer? So what if it's... Well, what about the drug addict who's scamming you for a drug fix? What about the homeless person who's going to take your $3 and buy some liquor to get high on? Isn't that important that I make sure he doesn't do that? It may or it may not. What is your correction with this man or this woman? You don't know. We're not given the tools to know unless we connect with our intuition. And that's what the tools that we'll talk about next week will assist you in doing. Because for 400 years, this society has taught, Western civilization has taught, disregard your intuition. Use logic. Logic is king. Logic will explain everything to you. You need to reconnect to your intuition. So that when you're driving down the street and you don't know whether you should go right or left, your intuition will give you an answer that is correct for you at that moment. Because you should turn right on Mondays and left on Tuesdays. Why? Because on Monday there's going to be somebody down that road that you have a correction with. And if you turn left, you'd miss them. And on Tuesday, another one is on the left. But you need that intuition connection. You wouldn't know it otherwise. The term is sharing. It's very important. In Kabbalah, language is very, very important. So please, I will use a very specific language. It's not giving, because when you give, you have an expectation to receive something back. I will also teach you astrology, not Western astrology, but Hebrew astrology. The astrology that when Abraham looked into the stars, God told him, go outside the tent and count the stars, and your descendants will be just like that. Because Abraham was an astrologer par excellence. He wrote the Sefer Yetzirah as a book of astrology. And what was he doing? He saw in his own chart he wasn't going to have children. But God changed his name and changed his destiny. There are tools in your name. If you go to the website, and now I'll bring up, the website is www.yeshem.com. On that website, when it's finished, but even now, you can type in your name and find your personal verses in the Torah. Your personal verses, which is literally God, the Creator, speaking to you from across the centuries, telling you what he wants you to do. Yes, it has to be interpreted. Yes, it's concealed. Yes, it's coded, but it's still him speaking to you. Use the tool. There's more that I want to automate on that website. That's what I ask for donations for. I'd like to get to the point where you put in your birth date in place and you'll know what your tikkun is, because in one of these classes I'll tell you how to find your tikkun. We don't use the word destiny because that implies it can't be changed. But tikkun is your correction. It's why you were born. You came here to do this action. It's a simple action. You're playing tennis. You hit the ball over the fence that doesn't have the gates in it, so you have to all walk all the way around. And you call out to the person walking by with 16 things in their hands, please pick up the ball and throw it back. They're tikkun, because they're rushing to a $3 billion business deal. And they have 16 things and they're late. And you're asking them to stop one more time for 3 seconds. That's their correction. Simple thing. Stop or don't stop. They'll stop, throw the ball back, because it goes against their comfort zone. They don't do it, they get to come back another lifetime and try again. Yes, ma'am.
So with the name,
yes. But did you get to the verses, your energy verses? Look for the energy. It's the second. You type in your name and you get stuff you've seen from the past. But go further down below. It says energy verses, and it will identify the verses in the Tanakh. Some people have a few verses and some have thousands. So,
So my question is, when I changed my name.
Right.
So, is that our relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although when you were born, you were given a name that fit the soul that you had at that moment.
Right.
But as you go through life, you make correction. So every night when you go upstairs while sleeping, you may have made a correction for your bicep or a correction for your left toe, left big toe. That part of your soul doesn't come back down. It has a new one. And when your soul has changed sufficiently, then you will have a need, feel the need for a different name. Yes. What was your name originally?
Sandra.
The reason why you had difficulty as Sandra is that in the middle, the little letters of the name Sandra, is the word judgment in reverse order. The word is din in Hebrew, and it's spelled nun dalet, or dalet nun. And in Sandra, it's in reverse order, nun dalet, but it's basically judgment. You started to ask a question. Yes. They all are part of your correction. The one that you feel most comfortable using is the one that you have the most involvement with your correction. So use that. Yes. Yeah, the ultimate purpose is to not be here. The ultimate purpose is to be in the Garden of Eden, studying Torah, enjoying the beneficence of the Creator. But we will reach a point where enough of us have achieved that, that we will bring that Garden of Eden into this world. And that world will be one of serenity, be one of peace. It will be one of every person's life without chaos. What's chaos? I love the Talmud, because in the Talmud it has this wonderful description of chaos. One man comes and he describes chaos as the loss of a child. We can all agree that that's chaos. Another man describes the loss of a parent. That clearly can be chaos as well. Sickness is chaos. Unhappiness is chaos. Depression is chaos. Then this wonderful man comes and says, chaos for him is when he reaches into his pocket and takes out 4 coins when he meant to take out 3. Now, you and I would never call that chaos. But what he's really saying is, we are in control of all of those details. And chaos-free world is on that level. If I want 3 coins, I'm going to get 3 coins. I'm not going to have to wait for 4. I'm not going to have to take out 4 and put 1 back. So, the ultimate goal is to bring heaven to be revealed in this earth. Whatever heaven means takes a lot of discussion. Yes. Or would it?
No, that's true. I don't know.
I'll give you an example. A friend of mine was studying Kabbalah in Toronto, and he and his wife owned a hair salon. And as you know, Saturday is a very big day for hair salons. But he was becoming Baal Tshuva, he was starting to keep Shabbat, and he didn't want to be open on Saturday. But he was horrified. How can you close a hair salon on Saturday? He finally took the plunge and opened on Sunday. And his finances improved dramatically. Give me a call. We'll have that discussion. We'll see what's appropriate for you. Yes?
Your phone number last week for the
Yes.
I called
you on that. Yes. Yeah, if you want. I'll say it again. It's 818-613-3457. And I'll reiterate, I'm here for the 10 weeks or so. Please abuse me. Make use of me. I'm here to share. I help people. I don't charge to help people. Make use of me. Yes. I would rather not speak to it tonight because we're a little late. But I will be happy to answer that and speak to it in another class. But whatever spiritual path you're following, even if it's a secular path, which is also a religion as far as I'm concerned, whatever path you're following, the tools that you will be taught will enhance that path for you. I'm sorry?
The verses on the website
are both in Hebrew and in English. There is a translation. And we'll talk more about that next week, if you like. Yes?
Is the Kabbalah prayer in English?
Is there a Kabbalah prayer in English?
Yeah, because you said Hebrew
The Anabakoach with those brown pages that I passed out. They're in Hebrew. They're transliterated on that paper, which means you can read English what I'm saying in Hebrew. And they're also on the website, which I need to give you for next week. When you print that out, there was another copy. It's 7 or 8 pages long that has the translation into English. So if you want to say it in English, you can. But by next week, you'll understand why that's not important. But you'll have a better answer next week. But the answer is yes, you can read it in English just as well as you.
The pronunciation
of Hebrew has it. Yes, it does. Well, it's not a mantra, but yes, it does.
If you say it in English, it doesn't carry the same way.
Correct. But that's why we gave you transliteration, so that until you've learned to say it in Hebrew, until you've learned to scan or read the Hebrew, you have the ability to say the sounds. So next week, I'd like you to bring with you that brown printout, which is on the website. Yes. But I'd like you to print that out individually. So where you get it is yeshem.com. Click on the Revealed Wisdom link at the top of the page. You scroll down about 1.5 inches to class number 3. And when that opens, you'll see a number of links that are the recordings of that class in the various cities. But below that, it's called handouts. There are 4 handouts. You only need to bring the brown one. But if you like to bring the 7 or 8 page one, there's a third one that has 30 pages. It isn't necessary. But feel free to learn from it. It's well worth learning. But you don't need to print out 30 pages. Ink's expensive. Are there any other questions? Have you practiced Buddhism? I'm sorry? There's a verse in the Torah that you're probably unfamiliar with. It says, and I'm paraphrasing, it says that Abraham gave to his son Isaac everything that he had. And the next verse it says, Abraham gave to his other sons gifts and sent them to the east. The word gift, matan, in Hebrew, can be spelled with a vav or without a vav. It can be spelled completely or not completely. It's one of the gifts of the Hebrew language. The word matan, the word gift, or the everything he had in the verse dealing with Isaac, it's spelled properly, completely. The verse dealing with his children, it's spelled without the vav. What the Kabbalist, what the Zohar explains to us is that Isaac was given a three-column system of the tree of life. If you've seen the Sphirot tree, which I recommend you don't look at because it's going to confuse you, but if you've seen it, and we all have, it has three columns: a right, which is sharing, a left, which is receiving, and a center column, which is balance. We all strive for balance. And as you know, the Eastern religions primarily come from a place of yin and yang, a two-column system. It all comes from that same place. You will find that what I teach will enhance your Buddhist service. But yes, it can feel very much like it, because it's all from the same source. There are 70 nations in the world. There are 70 paths to the Creator. Each nation has its own path. What is right for me may not be right for you, but the tools that are right for me, the tools that I teach you, you'll decide if they're right and you'll use them. Those that aren't right for you, you'll decide not to use. It's where it takes you. Well said. Well said. Any other questions? Have you seen that before?
I have.
Next week, I'm hoping you'll take it home, or I can solve it. I'll show it to you now if you don't have the patience. I'm sorry? Well, since she gave you the hint, give me a pen and I'll show you. You have to think outside the box twice. But we hope we're going to have you start to think outside the box. Absolutely. You have to go outside the box. Why did you see it as a box? How do you limit yourself? How do you limit yourself? And it's called being human. Thank you.